Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, March 21st, 2024. Juba County authorities fight armed land grabbers in Jebel Ladu village.
I want to tell them that the village exists and the work of the government is moving on. If anyone from the high authority, if anyone from the high rank is against this work, I will say it is against the government of the Republic of South Sudan.
And the U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan urges the international community to meet the immediate and dire humanitarian needs of the Sudanese people.
The Sudanese people could not be more unified and clear. They want an end to this war now. They want full humanitarian access, and they want their future back.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. After nearly 10 years of waiting, some landowners in Juba County will be shown their plots. This comes after 40 suspected land grabbers were arraigned in court last week and found guilty of land grabbing. Juba County and Central Equatoria State authorities have begun the process of showing plots to their rightful owners. For VOA News, Dennis Longonyi reports from Juba.
Plot owners in Jebel Ladu village of Juba County are in a celebratory mood after county authorities, accompanied by the Minister of Lands, Housing and Public Utilities of Central Equatorial State, started allocating plots previously seized by the land grabbers. Charles Lakowani, executive chief at Jebel Ladu, says owners of the plots in his territory pressured authorities to intervene, so they did.
Today, I will sleep. The government has done something so nice. As you can see, all people have come out today. I am happy. I now know the government is there. I didn't take the law in my hand. I told my youth that no one should fight. Now the government has come like this. We know that the government is with us.
Juba County Commissioner Charles Joseph Wani says other land grabbers must stop taking land by force around Juba.
I want to tell them that the village exists and the work of the government is moving on. If anyone from the high authority, if anyone from the high rank is against this work, I will say it is against the government of the Republic of South Sudan.
The Minister of Land, Housing and Public Utilities of Central Equatorial State, Frederick Laku, says individuals who want land should follow the proper channels as the land around Juba County is ancestral property.
Once the community accepted the land, then from there the ministry will come and demarcate the land. But there is no land for the ministry. You know, in the policy of South Sudan, land belongs to the community. So it is us dialoguing to the community. And then when the community agrees to give us the land, that is why we will come and demarcate and then we distribute to the people of South Sudan.
Commissioner Wani also called on various government institutions to help address the persistent problem of land grabs in Juba County.
We cannot allow anybody to continue manipulating the systems of the Republic of South Sudan on their personal interests. The personal interest today is coming to an end, and we shall continue pursuing this one to the last minute of our life in this country, because we wanted the well-being of our people. We wanted the well-being of everyone.
Land grabbing in Juba County has continued to make headlines, with the host community accusing individuals from Jonglei and Warap states of allegedly taking land from the Bari communities at gunpoint. Last month, 40 land grabbers appeared in court and were found guilty of carrying out land grabs in Jebel Ladu. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
The United Nations has warned that Sudan could be soon the world's largest hunger crisis. Speaking of looming catastrophe, food insecurity levels. The World Food Programme is sounding the alarm, emphasizing that logistical challenges in aid delivery amid the country's conflict have hindered access to 1 million people a month in desperate need of assistance in Darfur. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Edem Wosorno, the division director for the Office of Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs Operations and Advocacy, blamed Sudan's hunger crisis on the conflict between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, which began 11 months ago.
A humanitarian travesty is playing out in Sudan under a veil of international inaction and inattention. Simply put, we are failing the people of Sudan. By all measures, the sheer scale of humanitarian needs, the numbers of people displaced and facing hunger, Sudan is one of the worst humanitarian disasters in recent memory.
Speaking at the United Nations Security Council in New York Wednesday, Wasorno said that more than one-third of Sudan's population faces acute food insecurity. She said by the time the lean season sets in May, people in some parts of Darfur could face what the UN terms IPC Phase 5 level acute food insecurity, a stage referred to as catastrophic. Maurizio Martina, Deputy Director General of the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, echoed Wasorno's remarks.
The scale of hunger across Sudan is deeply concerning, with some areas, in particular in western and central Darfur, likely to slide into catastrophic food insecurity. The conflict is driving this hunger crisis. The escalation of fighting is directly impacting food security, especially as the conflict reaches new areas.
Martina said a negotiated political solution and immediate cessation of hostilities to allow in urgent humanitarian assistance is an essential step in eliminating the risk of famine. He called on the combatants to respect their obligations under international and humanitarian laws to allow safe access for life-saving assistance to millions in Sudan. World Food Program Deputy Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer Carl Skau said a lack of access and adequate resources to respond to the crisis in Sudan is exacerbating the situation.
There is a real and growing risk that the violence in Sudan will soon create the world's largest hunger crisis. But our emergency relief operation is being severely hampered by a lack of access and a lack of resources. Currently, 90% of the people in IPC Phase 4 who urgently need life-saving food assistance are trapped in areas that are largely inaccessible to humanitarian agencies. These include conflict hotspots such as Khartoum, Gezira State, the Kordofan, and the Darfur states.
Iskau said efforts to reach civilians in Sudan are hampered by the violence and interference from opposing forces. He also said bureaucratic obstacles are further shrinking the space for humanitarian groups to operate. Sudan's army-led government has been criticized for blocking access to RSF-controlled areas, especially in Darfur, where populations are most vulnerable. Al-Haris Idris Al-Haris Mohammed is Sudan's permanent representative to the UN. He said his government is not intentionally blocking aid operations.
I would like to assure you that we don't have bureaucratic hurdles in Sudan. It's not a normal situation. It's a wartime situation.
In addition to 18 million people facing acute food insecurity in Sudan, UN officials say 7 million people in neighboring South Sudan and nearly 3 million in Chad, which borders Darfur, also face dire hunger. In Washington, I'm Nabil Biagio.
Still on Sudan, a visiting senior U.S. official has warned that the efforts to end Sudan's conflict have now reached a time of incredible urgency and urged the international community to meet the immediate and dire humanitarian needs of the Sudanese people. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Tom Perriello, the U.S. Department of State Special Envoy for Sudan, has been on a two-week tour to Africa and the Middle East to demonstrate the priority U.S. government places on ending the conflict in Sudan.
At a time of incredible urgency, on this trip, we have been visiting with Sudanese across Uganda, Ethiopia, Kenya, Djibouti, and Egypt, as well as meeting with our African counterparts, and now visiting with our counterparts in Saudi Arabia, and finally the United Arab Emirates.
There are growing fears that the Sudan conflict could lead to new crises in a region battered by conflict and drought. Speaking during an online news briefing on Thursday, the U.S. diplomat said he met with a range of Sudanese civilians, including civil society, women and youth, to hear their perspectives on how to bolster efforts to respond to urgent needs and end the conflict.
The Sudanese people could not be more unified and clear. They want an end to this war now. They want full humanitarian access, and they want their future back. And it is our job, all of us who care about the people of Sudan, around the world, around this neighborhood and beyond, to be urgently seized with the project of ending this war, preventing the worst of this famine, and giving the Sudanese people a chance to determine their own future.
On Wednesday, the United Nations warned that the brutal fighting in Sudan is driving a hunger crisis, with some areas likely to experience catastrophic levels of food insecurity in the coming months. Perriello gave more details.
This is an urgent situation where we are seeing signs of famine already across the country of Sudan. We have known about horrific atrocities, particularly against women and children, forced recruitment, even slavery in this conflict that must end.
The conflict between the Sudanese army and the rival paramilitary Rapid Support Forces has left 18 million people, more than a third of population, facing acute food insecurity. The UN says up to 15,000 people have been killed since the fighting broke out in mid-April last year. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, more than 200 million people who identify themselves as people of African descent who live outside the African continent face racial discrimination. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. More than 200 million people who identify themselves as people of African descent and live outside the African continent face racial discrimination. As the world marks International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination today, the United Nations say the international community is recognizing that people of African descent represent a distinct group whose human rights must be promoted and protected. Maureen Ojiambo reports from California.
The International Day for Elimination of Racial Discrimination is observed annually on the day the police in Sharpeville, South Africa, opened fire and killed 69 people at a peaceful demonstration against apartheid pass laws in 1960. Despite the efforts to end racial discrimination, people of the African descent are the most affected. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres says it is time to fix the barriers preventing an end to the problem.
Racism is an evil infecting countries and societies around the world, a deeply entrenched legacy of colonialism and enslavement. The results are devastating. Opportunities stolen, dignity denied, rights violated, lives taken and lives destroyed. Racism is rife, but it impacts communities differently.
This year's theme is A Decade of Recognition, Justice and Development, implementing the International Decade for People of African Descent. Guterres says racial discrimination continues to destroy lives and limit opportunities, preventing billions of people from enjoying human rights and freedom.
people of African descent face a unique history of systemic and institutionalized racism and profound challenges today. We must respond to that reality, learning from and building on the tireless advocacy of people of African descent. That includes governments advancing policies and other measures to eliminate racism against people of African descent, and tech firms urgently addressing racial bias in artificial intelligence.
United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Turk says efforts towards recognition, justice and development for people of African descent must continue beyond 2024.
Millions still endure the consequences of the historical denial of their humanity. Millions more suffer the cruel legacies of colonialism or the memories of the inhuman and criminal enslavement of generations of women, men and children of African descent. National, ethnic, linguistic and religious minorities have had their human rights trampled upon. So too, Roma, indigenous peoples, and many other groups. This year, we also mark the end of the International Decade for People of African Descent.
Turk urges the international community to look into the persistent gaps in the protection of hundreds of millions of people whose human rights continue to be violated.
Today and every day, we remember the victims of racism. We honor every person who continues to raise their voice and fight for change. We have seen progress. Powerful anti-racism movements have shaken governments and demanded equal rights. Countries are adopting new laws. They are taking multiple affirmative action measures. But we are far from where we should be. No country can claim to be free of racism.
The proclamation of an international decade for people of African descent in 2014 marked a significant milestone in the global effort to combat systemic racism and racial discrimination faced by people of African descent worldwide. On this day, as the international decade comes to an end, UN experts say all member states must push forward to end discrimination. Reporting for VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
From San Francisco, we move to South Africa, where the governing party has gone to court to try to stop a newly registered rival party from contesting May elections. Katie Bartlett reports the party is fronted by disgraced former President Jacob Zuma and his threatened violence if it is barred from polls.
National elections on May 29 are widely expected to be the most fiercely contested ever, with surveys suggesting the African National Congress Party will win less than 50% of the vote for the first time since the advent of democracy in 1994. Now, a newly formed opposition party named Mkhonto we Sizwe, or MK for short, has infuriated the ANC by naming itself after the ANC's disbanded armed wing, which was formed by Nelson Mandela and fought against apartheid. The fact that former President Jacob Zuma, an ANC stalwart, has thrown his weight behind the rival party has only added insult to injury, and the ANC has suspended him. On Monday, the ANC went to the electoral court arguing the MK party did not meet the necessary criteria when it registered with the Electoral Commission late last year. ANC Secretary General Fikile Mabulala addressed media outside court on Monday, saying the ANC is also taking legal action to try and prevent Zuma from using the storied Mkhonto we Sizwe name.
We are challenging him in two levels in terms of this formation. You must understand, this is the beginning. Here today in the electoral court, we are challenging him in terms of deregistration of this party.
Mabalula said that, additionally, the ANC was pursuing a copyright infringement case against the MK party in terms of the use of the name. While Zuma was forced to resign as president in 2018 amid corruption scandals and is currently mired in several court cases, he remains very popular with his fellow ethnic Zulus in KwaZulu-Natal province. When, in July 2021, he was briefly jailed for contempt of court, South Africa saw the worst violence in its post-apartheid history, with more than 300 killed in looting and rioting. A poll this month by a local research group of the Brenthurst Foundation showed the ANC getting below 40% and the MK party winning 13% of the vote. Here's the foundation's director, Greg Mills.
Does this mean that South Africa is going to experience a violent election because it's more contested? Well, that remains to be seen. It's undoubtedly going to be very heated, particularly in the KwaZulu-Natal province, where the MK party has around one quarter of the vote.
Already, some members of the MK party, like the party's youth leader, as well as Visvin Reddy, a Zuma ally, have threatened violence if they are barred from competing in elections. That was Reddy speaking to applause at an MK rally earlier this month, where he said, quote, "This country will be turned into civil war the day that MK is not allowed to campaign and be on the ballot paper. No one will vote. No one in this country will vote. We will make sure." After Monday's arguments from MK and ANC lawyers, the Electoral Court reserved judgment until a later date. An MK spokesman did not reply to multiple requests for comment from VOA. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg, we go to Ukraine, where a recent series of Ukrainian drone strikes targeting Russian oil refineries has significantly reduced Moscow's processing capacity as Kyiv and its allies aim to deprive Russia of its main source of revenue. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
A Ukrainian drone flies through the smoke-filled sky above the Ryazan oil refinery in western Russia, circling back and crashing into the factory, causing a huge explosion. The March 13th attack was among a series of recent strikes targeting Russia's oil industry. Kyiv claims to have targeted at least seven different refineries, many of them in the region neighbouring Ukraine, says analyst Tom O'Donnell, who spoke to VOA from an energy conference in Berlin.
Wars take huge amounts of diesel fuel for tanks, for trucks, and so forth. And so that region is directly responsible for diesel for the war.
The attacks are also aimed at reducing Russia's oil revenue. Another drone strike hit a refinery in the Nizhny Novgorod region March 12th, some 775 kilometers inside Russia.
By hitting refineries up there, what happens is the diesel that they export, they were exporting almost as much diesel before as oil. That's being destroyed, and they have to shift it to oil if they want to make money on that.
The recent drone attacks have reduced Moscow's overall oil processing capacity by 370,500 barrels per day, or some 7% of the total, according to calculations by Reuters. Ukraine's president praised the military's growing drone capabilities. President Volodymyr Zelensky said that in recent weeks, many have already seen that the Russian war machine has vulnerabilities and that we can exploit these vulnerabilities with our weapons. The Ukrainian strikes could increase the impact of the Western price cap on Russian oil, which was imposed in December 2022 in a bid to cut the Kremlin's profits. Most Russian oil is now moved by tanker, much of it through the Baltic Sea. That presents an opportunity for Ukraine's allies, says O'Donnell.
The tankers themselves are very old and rather sketchy. They could be stopped in the straits, in the territorial waters between Denmark and Sweden, and be inspected legally. And the inspectors could say, well, this isn't good enough insurance, or these ships aren't of proper quality to be carrying this oil, and make them turn around. That would be a dramatic intervention.
Since December, G7 nations have toughened their monitoring of compliance with the price cap on Russian oil. Kyiv and its allies hope their combined efforts will cut Russia's main source of revenue that is funding the invasion of Ukraine. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Can you share an inspirational quote and where you heard it from?
Heavy rains are a reminder of challenges in life. Never ask for a lighter rain. Just pray for better umbrella. I just came across it while I was reading something on social media.
This quote I just added from a church. The father was like, "For those who seek, always find. And so fight endlessly for what you want for the future."
Friends are like buttons on the lift. They either bring you down or take you up. I heard it while I was in secondary school and it stuck since then.
Whoever fears Allah will have solution to whatever problems. It is from the Holy Quran.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
And I will repeat, the number is +1 202 630 8011. We look forward to hearing your thoughts and remarks on some of the issues in this story. And I must tell you, this is part of the segment that I enjoy every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Thursday, March 21st, 2024. We now leave you with Dynamic and the song Jere Jere.
All right. Sudanese child. Ooh yeah, ooh yeah, yeah, yeah. Ooh yeah. Ruka music. Auma. Jere jere vidunia de.
Jere jere.
Sibuna si sambala.
Jere jere.
Suata ta dunia de.
Suata, suata.
Nasi mutu sambala. Sana nami lotuko,
lotuko, lotuko, yeah.
Do you faba ja fibe,
fibe, fibe.
Asana nami lokoya,
lokoya, lokoya, ya.
Tere tere vidunia de,
tere tere.
Sibu nasi sambala,
tere tere.
Suata ta dunia de,
mama, suata.
Nasi mutu sambala.
We have been listening to Dynamic with that song, Jere Jere. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer Peter Heinle, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.